my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, it's a Patreon pick this week. It's our good friend Lee, the magician, and he has picked, Dave, it's the fifth entry in a franchise that stars Charles Bronson, Dave. So we'll go back to 1994, and we are going to be reviewing Death Wish 5, Dave, and The Face of Death, I might add, as well. So have you ever seen Death Wish 5, Dave?
You know, I had not. I did not know this existed. And I have this vague kind of memory of something like Family Guy or something like that, where, you know, it's like a parody. You know how they do these cutaways to these like abstract futures or something? And it's like Death Wish 7 or something like that. And then it's just got Charles Bronson in a bed going, "Let me die." So, no, I didn't know this one existed. And I have to say, Chris, I think we would have been left to our own devices if we were doing all the picks and everything. I think we could be doing this podcast for 20 years and not have got to this movie.
So, no.
I think it's great. And again, I've said it before, but this is one of the things I love about, like, just putting that choice into other people's hands and being exposed to films that, you know, you would have never watched, let alone reviewed. So what I would say is, I was familiar with the Death Wish franchise. You know, can you think about some of the films you watched as a kid? It's ridiculous, right? I mean, that original one from 74, that was gritty as fuck, or at least in my memory it was. I have to go back and watch that at some point. But I seem to remember because, like, my uncles watch, you know, all sorts of movies and stuff. I just remember if I was staying over at my nan's or something, you know, this something like this would be on. So I had watched it a few times, and it's iconic, isn't it? I mean, it's right up there with Clint as well, you know, Dirty Harry, you know, these kind of gritty 70s vigilante, or I say vigilante, I know Eastwood was a cop, wasn't he, old Dirty Harry, but, you know, sort of taking the law into your own hands, this like real kind of hard right-wing justice. These movies were quite prevalent at that time. But I must admit, if you'd have asked me without going back to this one, you know, were they still making Death Wish movies in the 90s? I'd have said, don't be daft. It's like a 70s thing. And they might have done some in the 80s, you know, a few sequels, but not in the fucking 90s. I mean, Bronson was old when he started the Death Wish franchise, you know. He was 50-something when he started in the Westerns. So, not familiar with the franchise, Chris. And it's one of those pop culture things, isn't it? Like, well, I say that people of our generation, you know, we all know what Death Wish is, even if you've not seen the movies. But yeah, nothing about the fifth installment. How about yourself?
I'm with you. I've seen the first one and all the premise of it all, and you're right, it had that Dirty Harry gritty 70s feel, and it was a bit of a success, wasn't it? It was a phenomenon, like you say, create a franchise. Charles Bronson, you know, at the time, I watched him in The Great Escape. He was probably, this was 94. So he would have been 50 when he did the first one. In this one, he's 71. It's his last ever outing as Paul Kersey, Dave, which some would say, fucking hell, he should have given it up before. But there you go. I've never seen this movie. Like I said, watched the first one, enjoyed it. It was really interesting how his character changes from like this mild-mannered, like, family guy, and then obviously things happen to his family and that, and he, you know, he seeks revenge. But fast forward to 1994, there's not a fucking cat in hell's chance I would have watched this, Dave. And this has actually got on Rotten Tomatoes the lowest scoring movie we have ever reviewed on anything. It's at zero, Dave. So
wow. Actual zero.
Zero, yeah, at the moment. But on Metacritic, it's 25. And I think on IMDb, let's have a look on IMDb. I think it's about 4, which we always say is... Yeah. The benchmark of shit, basically. 4.9. So it's in the middle. So we've had films around the same thing. So the fact that Lee's picked this and the Bronson and everything, just reading up on it was like, why would you get a 71-year-old fucking bloke to go out again, you know, get the band back together? But I know they do it now. You see Stallone and Arnie. But in the mid-90s, this was unheard of, getting a pensioner, wasn't it? If you were in this sort of role, you're playing granddad in a Christmas movie, aren't you? Or you're the first one to get taken out. You're not the fucking main star of a movie. So, yeah, very bizarre. But also, I was so intrigued to watch it, Dave. I was like, oh, fucking brilliant. And it is on YouTube as well, which says it all. But there you go, if you want to watch it. But no, I've never seen it. I'm looking forward to it. And what a way for us to sort of break our Death Wish fucking cherry with the fifth one, Dave. And the last one.
Again, no one saw that coming. But Chris, I did go on a bit of a rabbit hole about Charles Bronson, because I thought, well, he was this kind of iconic character. And unfortunately, I mean, he passed away not long ago. I think it was early 2000s he passed away. So, you know, only 10 years or so after this. But he was born, Chris, in 1921 in Pennsylvania. He was the child of Lithuanian immigrants. And he was Charles Dennis Buczynski. And it was when he got into Hollywood, they kind of wanted a more marketable name, you know. So that's where they came up with kind of Charles Bronson. But yeah, he was kind of signed up for the Second World War and everything. He spent his time in Alaska, I guess, guarding that, you know, it's quite close to Russia, isn't it? So I don't know if before Russia were part of the Allies, maybe he was stationed up there to guard the coast. But yeah, it really, really interesting character. Actually, I've seen it here. 2003, he passed away. So 9 years after this movie.
Bloody hell. And then you can tell his age in this, can't you? Which is interesting. That was the first thing I wanted to check. How old is he? Because I remember him in The Great Escape. He's fit as a fiddle, you know, ripped up and everything. For someone in the 60s to be in that shape. And he had a lot of films back of that. Obviously, he was in The Magnificent Seven as well. So yeah, great actor, Charles Bronson. But this is well down the line in his career. Let's just say that. So anyway, Dave, we've got off on a tangent. Shall we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
In the world of glamour and high fashion, a new crime syndicate is taking over.
Peekaboo.
I watched this guy coming up through the Irish gangs. Now he's ruthless.
He's infiltrated every aspect of my business.
Their methods are brutal.
Promise me if anything should happen to me, he'll take care of Chelsea.
Olivia!
Gone.
The one thing they didn't count on was an enemy who wouldn't back down.
You know, these people, they steal, they murder, destroy people's lives, and get away with it.
Kersey's no amateur. You've got a problem.
Charles Bronson is back.
I'm coming for you, O'Shea.
And this time, he's not leaving until his wish is their command.
No judge, no jury, no appeal, and no deals.
Let the cops take these guys down. Sometimes the law works.
And sometimes it doesn't.
It's showtime.
It's history.
Where's the girl?
Charles Bronson.
Guns make you nervous?
Death Wish.
Paul Kersey returns to New York City in the Witness Protection Program under the name Paul Stewart. Spurs and Liverpool curly-haired player. Invited by his girlfriend, Olivia, to a fashion show, Paul confronts mobster Tommy O'Shea, who is threatening Olivia, his ex-wife, and mother of their daughter, Chelsea. Discovering bruises on Olivia's wrist, Paul confronts Tommy, leading to a confrontation with Tommy's henchman, Chicky, who threatens Paul with a revolver. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Why don't you finish with, in a world where, yeah. You know, this movie is fucking horrendous. But also, I couldn't keep my eyes off it because it's got that 90s, you know, like, the way they've shot it, it's got that, like, 90s sort of TV, daytime sort of soap feel about it. Like, Knots Landing type, you know, the rip-off of Dallas or that. I don't know, it's weird. You can tell there's a production value behind it, but the fucking acting, Jesus Christ. I mean, the whole premise of the movie is there's a mobster running some fashion thing. We talk about, like, the other week, we were talking about, like, the lifeguards, and, like, they've got to win that fucking lifeguard thing because of this whole production, you know, this whole building thing is life or death that someone wins his lifeguard race, or, like, you know, Dirty Dancing and all that shit, you know. It's basically, it's just a fucking holiday park, but the whole of, like, the world is going to collapse if this thing doesn't go off and Johnny doesn't dance with Baby and all. It's fucking bollocks. This, why would Bronson be at a fucking fashion thing? I know it's his ex-wife and all this shit, but it makes no sense. And this Tommy O'Shea, he's not just hamming it up. He's basically read every bad guy or gangster movie and gone, I think I need to play it. But it's just nonsense. They're all B-movie actors who are all in the A-team at some point, Dave, because I recognise quite a lot of his henchmen after the A-team and stuff. It's fucking nonsense. And Bronson is so unconvincing. He needs to be sat in the corner with a pipe and fucking slippers, Dave. I'm not having this at all. And that's not being ageist. It just does not go with this movie. Fuck me. It's this is garbage. It's fucking rubbish, this movie.
There you go. Rock a mode, like, breakdown of the structure of Death Wish 5. But, Chris, so you did say the ex-wife there. So, no, it's Paul. You know, they changed his name, but not his first name, obviously, to Paul Stewart, which is, I'm not going to not be able to think of Paul Stewart, the footballer, to be honest. But yeah. Olivia is his girlfriend. That's how it's set up, isn't it? Now, his girlfriend is played by Leslie Ann Down. Do you want to know how old Leslie Ann Down was in this movie? Or at this time in 1994?
Go on, late 30s.
Well, she was born in 1954. So she'd have been 40. We're close.
Yeah, close, yeah. Fucking hell.
The old and he's classic, like, babe. 70. Yeah.
But, 70.
I mean, she looks very good, I would say, for her age as well. And it just, like, on screen, it looks odd to me. And that is because of the 30-year age difference, I think. But, yeah, Chris, I'm going to have to disagree with you. Well, actually, I'll agree with you, right? This is a poor movie, and I can't imagine old Charlie up there with, you know, discussing his favourite, most iconic movies. I can't think Death Wish 5 is going to be on the top of this list. But I think, Chris, this might almost sneak into the so bad it's good kind of category for me. Because Tommy O'Shea, right? Tommy O'Shea.
Character.
What a fucking brilliant name. It's played by Michael Parks. Now, he plays Earl at the start of From Dusk Till Dawn. He's the sheriff.
The sheriff, yeah, he is.
Yeah, and he pops up in all these other little things. He's been in a couple of Kevin Smith movies. I've seen that. I'm sure, it's Tusk and Red State. So for me, he's a great kind of comic book villain. I mean, he is really kind of hamming it up there. But I kind of find him quite hypnotic on screen. What I don't get is, though, because he's so-called this Irish gangster, but, like, his henchmen all seem to be mafia.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. They're all Italian, aren't they? Hey, mama, that's fucking nonsense.
So I'm like, which one is it? Or are the mafia taking on O'Shea's now? It's fucking bizarre. But yeah, I have to say, I think Bronson's sleepwalking through this movie, isn't he?
Oh, like, you know, he's,
and fair play to him. The guy's 70 or something. You know, it's like he probably had a massive payday for this. And so he's like, right, okay, well, you know, I'll do it, you know, because I need the money, I guess. But yeah, it is not good. But I think there are some iconic moments in this. And, you know, you've got this weird kind of money laundering crime going on. And like you say, why is he at a fashion show? Well, it's because his ex-girlfriend's there. But it's all kind of so convoluted, isn't it? And she just happens to be, I guess she just happens to have a taste in men that's like murderous killers. You know, because old Paul there, he's the vigilante, isn't he? He's known to the police now. That's why he's in the witness protection program. I mean, the first thing you do is you go back to the city where you grew up, really, isn't it? If you're in the witness protection program, you go back to New York, you know, the place where it all started. So there are some moments in this, and I can imagine watching this as a kid, especially, I think even if you were exposed to the 70s movies, like in the 90s, they look 70s, don't they? So they kind of look dated, and it's not for you. But I can get it. If you were watching this around that time, I think there's something watchable about it. And again, it's very much like a TV movie. All the quality of the film, the way it's shot and everything, it comes across like a TV movie. But I kind of get it. I can see why Lee's probably picked something like this. And again, under no illusions, I don't think that it's a great movie, but there's something charming about it for me.
Well, Dave. Maybe for you. You know what gets me though? When like Paul's having that meal with his girlfriend, Olivia, and they're in the restaurant, and then Tommy comes in and she literally looks like she's seen the Grim Reaper, don't she? She's like so petrified, but it's all over acting. Do you ever remember that scene? I don't remember the one in Fools and Horses where Del Boy says to Uncle Albert, look shocked when he said, Rodney says he's taking some girl on a date, it's not Cassandra. And every time he walks past him, he goes, oh, and he's going, not fucking now, not now. And it's like, she's been told, right, when we get to this point, look shocked. And she goes, oh, and I'm like, I just kept thinking of Uncle Albert. And then when she goes in the toilet, and one of the fucking henchmen is dressed as a woman, and it's like,
Freddy Flakes.
Yeah, Freddy Flake. And then just, I mean, to be fair, there's some gruesome. What's really strange is it's a really, really crap daytime TV soap opera episode, like really poor. But then all of a sudden you do get this gruesome bit of violence, which the Death Wish franchise is renowned for, just to get the rating up, I think, on when they were doing like the rating board were looking at it. Because he fucking starts talking, I think Paul's going to fucking come in here and, you know, get him and he'll rescue her. Like you normally do in these action movies, don't you? The woman's about to be attacked or whatever. And it's like, you know, he fucking rams ahead a couple of times. That's pretty good. He rams ahead a few times into the fucking mirror and that, doesn't he? And disfigures it. And what makes me laugh is the fucking doctor goes, yeah. There's no context to this at all. She's basically got bandages like a mummy around her face in hospital. And the doctor goes, yeah. She'll never be the same again, despite medical technology. When they get her home, she's got fucking less cuts and bruises than Paul. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on this movie? The acting and the premise of it. And Paul just keeps going to his fucking safe to get his gun out, Dave. Like, he's all of a sudden, he's going to turn into fucking the T-fucking 800 or something. I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted already.
It's like Wolverine in Logan, isn't it? You know, where he won't pop his claws. You know, something's happened before, but he's turned over
Bruce
a new
Lee.
Leaf.
Yeah,
you know,
Bruce Lee.
Yeah, or Bruce Lee. Yeah. You know, he's in the witness protection program, so he's probably, you know, promised that he won't go down this route again. But yeah, I agree. I mean, when old Freddy Flake's there, I mean, what a weird kind of character trait, you know. Oh, he's got his wig on. It's like, oh, this dandruff. <It's> like, what does that add? I just don't know. But yeah, very, very gruesome. I mean, I sort of think anyone's instinct is to put your hands up, isn't it? You know, if someone's trying to ram your head into anything, you're going to put your hands up. But, you know, it's just all a bit weird the way that came out. And like you say, I mean, okay, she's got scars. But Chris, the film is called Death Wish 5, The Face of Death. it's like they've got a group of small children, you know, to come in and name the movie. It's like, oh yeah, smash the face up. Let's call it The Face of Death. Dun, dun, dun. It's ridiculous. But yeah, so obviously she comes back. She's an ex-model, isn't she? So, you know, very, very conscious about her looks and everything. So she comes back, she's in the room. And then Freddie Flakes, you know, he's not got the wig on now, but he's parading as a police officer or something, knocks on the house, you know, knocks on the door and stuff. And Paul sort of sees him. And then he's like, you know, go and hide out in the fire escape. Because, I don't know, Chris, reasons. He just happens to know that these people aren't the police. You know, he doesn't ask them for it. He just knows, you know, his spidey sense is tingling or something, you know. So I thought the writing for this is not tight at all. And it's these little moments, though, that just sort of make me laugh. And yeah, obviously things don't go well. You know, she runs up on the top of the roof, and I think it's Freddie again who shoots her, and then she sort of falls to her death. And that's the bit where you're thinking, oh, shit's going to go down. Because, Chris, it takes fucking ages for Paul to actually get his groove on, doesn't it? You know, get his mojo back and start fucking killing people. You know, for someone who's had four previous movies of murdering sprees, you know, he goes through half the movie, like, you know, the guy asks him, Tommy, he's like, do you not like guns? He's like, I don't like idiots with guns, you know, but it's only when she dies, you know, what feels like halfway through the movie, that eventually sort of gets his kill on.
Yeah, and you're right. And the movie only runs at 95 minutes. So it's very slow. That's why I think it's got that daytime TV, like, episode. You know, when you sat on the sofa, you were blagging school or something, you're like, there's fuck all on telly here. No, obviously now there's all sorts in there. But when we were younger, I used to watch like the Rockford Files or the $6 Million Man, like Going for Gold was on. And then you'd have that lull of 2 hours where there'd be some shit movie before like the kids' TV started.
Highway to Heaven.
Yeah, and all that sort of nonsense in the afternoon.
Littlest Hobo.
Yeah, Littlest Hobo. Yeah, there's a voice. It keeps on calling me down the road. That's a terrible day. But anyway, that's where I'll always be. But what I would say is that, well, if you laugh, is the cop, because he knows Paul and he knows Paul's that. He says to him, don't get involved. I've been working on this case for 16 years. How shit is he as a cop, Dave?
But I've got a good feeling about it now.
Yeah, exactly. we might be near the end. Don't get involved here, Paul. We might be coming. We might be able to get Tommy O'Shea. What, the man who's just bludgeonly fucking got people killed by his henchmen all round and everything. But yeah, when he gets to that point, and they can clearly kill Paul, when she gets killed, again, it's a pointless killing, because you're like, well, surely she's like the sort of the diamond that Paul's got to keep away from the thieves. Like, you would have her, like, she's got to keep her alive. And it's like, no, she's dead. Right, but that's it. Paul's back on. But when he jumps over the side, he's 71 years old. He does a Colt Seavers onto some bin bags, right? He's definitely fucked his back up, but no, 71. And they stand over him for ages with guns. And then because they hear a siren, they go, oh, let's get out of here. And he survives. And I'm like, oh, come on. There's nothing wrong with him. He gets up. And he has gets cracked a couple of times, doesn't he? There's no scars or anything. But what makes me laugh is, Dave, there's a bit after this where, like, Paul gets his gun, he takes it out of Smith & Wesson. He's got, the thing is, he's got a packet of bullets with about 15 bullets in it, Dave. But they're apparently they live forever through the film.
He's got no other ammunition. It's like a cheat code.
Computer game. There's infinite reloads on it. And he's got this, like, Cherokee Jeep again. He's supposed to be in witness protection. He's got a black Cherokee Jeep, which looks a bit like the Smoking the Bandit car. It's got the gold fucking lettering all over it. He's not being discreet, but there's a bit where the copper, this woman, and there's a shootout on the street, and Paul's there, and he's getting involved, and she just stands in the middle of the road firing bullets at an oncoming car that's going at like 60 miles an hour, as if like the bullets are going to stop the car from going. You know, you see these films, they shoot them in the head and the car goes to the left and the hero stands there. You know, we did Sharky's Machine, didn't we? He does a similar scene, but Burt Reynolds actually rolled out the way, did his own stunt. this woman just stands there and gets killed and gets mowed down. And you're like, why would you stand there? What are you expecting? You're not Christopher Reeve. You're not fucking Clark Kent where the car hits him. You're dead. See, and there's this little scene where the coppers are seeing Paul at the fucking, whether it's the hospital, and these three or four people just randomly getting caught in the crossfire of this before he starts really taking names, doesn't he? But yeah, there's so many bits in this. It's just so fucking hokey. It's unbelievable.
I will say, when the female copper got taken out, I thought that was a great stunt, to be fair.
Oh yeah, very good. Yeah, very real.
Yeah, yeah. That was very real, because a few, like about a minute or 30 seconds before, you had Big Al being taken out, didn't you? Because you know, Big Al was gonna turn, he was gonna, you know, blow the lid on this whole money laundering scam that they had, and they kind of threatened him with the random fucking acid bath that was in there. I mean, it's just normal, isn't it? I guess, you know, in this sweatshop that they've got underneath the fashion show parade.
Some racist comments in there as well.
This acid bath right there, and they're like sort of threatening him with it. And then they it's fairly brutal. They sort of cut him, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, they I know he's a big fat lad, like, in fact, I'm going to cut that bit out. Yeah. I know he's a big lad, but, you know.
Is he, Dave? Yeah.
They kind of, you know, still, you've got to go to hospital for a few fucking stitches there, haven't you? You know, they probably got him in the side there. And then, again, you know, he's got a wire, hasn't he? Because he's gone to the police, he's got a wire, and the mobsters, they know he's wired up. Because they've been threatening him in a previous scene, but they just know now. I think they've been tipped off, hadn't they? There was a guy on the inside, a rat, who's tipping them off, and then they sort of take the pen. But what I'm getting to is, when they sort of run him over, it's such a ridiculous shot, because they kind of hit him with the car, and he just goes flying backwards.
Yeah, like
up in the air, as if he's been launched off a trampoline or something, backwards through the window. I just thought the physics of it just looked really odd. Right? If someone's going to come and knock you over, you know what that looks like, you know, and probably rolling over the bonnet or whatever. No, this guy goes flying backwards. So I thought that was kind of a comical stunt for me. But yeah, when the female copper got taken out, I thought that was a really good kind of stunt. But that's probably where a lot of the money went, as well as Charlie's bank account, I imagine.
Probably the best actress as well in the movie. But yeah. The next bit is when he does, he goes to Chicky, doesn't he? The fucking Italian guy again. And he's like a knobhead, isn't he? But he goes to his mom, I'm not speaking American, his mother's, you know, like the fucking restaurant, whatever. And he's there, the only one in the shop. And Chicky doesn't see this guy with a newspaper who, you can see it's Bronson. A minute earlier, they knocked Bronson unconscious.
Almost
right?
Got the little holes cut out, you know, like comedy, fucking
like an arrow. I'm here.
Like the cartoons.
You can see, though, the way he's shot, that you see the side of Bronson's face. Now, he's just been involved in knocking him unconscious and that. And he's like, he doesn't bat an eyelid. And he goes, he agrees to see you got a bit of custom for a change, mom. And then he's like, yeah, and then they sort of cross over. And it's like that Doc Brown thing in Back to the Future, you know, where he's like talking about, oh, there's going to be a hell of a storm tonight and all that stuff. And they don't really look. And he goes, can I have your paper? And he goes, yeah. And then he gets the coffee, goes past him again. Chicky does not even realize, like, you know, it's fucking the guy they've just taken out. And he puts this fucking sugar stuff on his cannoli, which I've had cannolis in New York. They're not actually that bad. They're the heart attack inducing, but they are nice. But then he's eating like fucking Augustus Gloop, innit? He's like, you're going to be messy. And the next minute, he's dead. And I'm like, and fucking Paul goes past him. But what tickle me, Dave, when he's getting the vengeance. So that bit goes, he's dead. And the copper comes. Paul walks out the fucking restaurant, right? And she's casually grabbed the copper, his mum. They literally cross over. He literally holds the door for him. And the copper doesn't go, hang on, where's he going? You know, like, what's going on? He just runs in and Paul just goes off. It's the next bit when he goes after fucking that Freddy, who's got a massive...
So great. So oh,
he's great. He's got a massive quiff. He is well punching above his weight. He's got an absolutely stunning blonde woman who, let's be honest, Dave, love the chesticles. That's all I'll say. Boobicles or whatever. They have a bath together, which is a bit weird. She's washing his hair. There's no way you would have pulled her, but he gets this fucking remote control football from Toys R Us or whatever. And he's like, it's for a great person. And I'm just
thinking, he's like the Joker or something. It's fucking brilliant.
He's Batman 66 with the bomb in it where he throws it over the side and Robin's like, oh my God. And he goes, don't worry, I'm here, Robin. You know, and he stands up next to him. It's nonsense. The remote control goes for about 50 yards. I mean, you see Freddy, he's not daft. He's got security everywhere and he's got cameras up. He's got alarms. He's got all his technology. He obviously knows that he's in a world where he has to be like looking over his shoulder. Fucking haircut's the best, I must admit. But he then comes out and Paul says, Freddy, and he looks up and he's like, no, and he presses the fucking remote control and blows him up on fire. He's fucking... It's like cartoon level fucking slapstick in it. It's supposed to be gritty and it's just shit. Oh, brilliant.
I think you mean great. I mean, I just think it is so ridiculous. And like you say, in this, if you think where it started, this franchise, you know, very, very gritty. I mean, fucking New York in the 70s, I can only imagine, you know, just how dangerous it was. I'd been there once in the 80s, and that was dangerous enough, but I think it was worse before. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous. You get a fucking remote control fucking football with a bomb in it. And then Freddy, who's super paranoid anyway, you know, if you see a football, you don't just instinctively pick it up and then hold it with two hands right in front of your face, do you?
Kick it. And you know that wasn't a football in its weight and density, wouldn't you? Because it's supposed to be rubberized or leather in it so you can kick it. That would have been a plastic structure he had in his hand.
Yeah. But as well, there's a bit in the editing that's a bit off, because just before it blows up,
yes,
like, he turns into Michael Myers.
It turns into like, well, that bit when Arnie's head comes up in Total Recall, you're getting ready for a surprise. His fucking head blows up before he's even gone. It's weird. I'm glad you spotted that. It's fucking brilliant. You know, hey Dave, here's one for you. I didn't know. So you're saying about this movie, considering, sorry to cut across, about where we are in the franchise. You go to 74, the first one. It's a fucking iconic action movie. It's like sort of like Taken, isn't it? That sort of movie. Yeah, he seeks vengeance and all this. And obviously he's a normal guy, but he seeks vengeance and that. But I only found this out the other day, and you'll laugh at this. Did you know what, when they say on a franchise has jumped the shark, do you know what that's referenced to?
It's Happy Days. It's when Fonzie jumped the shark.
Well, I didn't know that. Yeah, so I didn't know that, Dave. So, and I'm not just doing this to drop it in there, but you know, obviously on the reality one, I keep going on doing these little baby BBC radio stuff. I'm reality TV expert, right? The fucking presenter starts going like about, so we're talking about Love Island and the guys, and he's a lovely bloke and he's chatting away and he's going, yeah, it's like, they've just, for me, Love Island's jumped the shark, hasn't it? And he goes, yeah, tell everyone, Chris, in the roundabout turns, he starts lining me up going, yeah, maybe we should tell everyone what that means, Chris. And I'm going, I don't know what it means. I've heard the saying loads of times. And I'm going, you know, when you go quiet.
Of all the things that I thought you'd get caught out on.
Yeah, that was it.
It wasn't a Happy Days reference.
Yeah, maybe we need to tell everyone, Chris, and the listeners, what that means. And I went, yeah, maybe we should, Jim. And I'm going, holy fuck, I don't know what that means. And I couldn't get on Google. And I went dead quiet. And obviously, you can't have dead silence on the radio. And he goes, in fact, let me explain to everyone, Chris. I think he realized I didn't have a fucking clue. And as he's telling me, I'm going, oh, yeah. Yeah, isn't it funny that, Chris? I'm going, yeah, and I'm just going along with him, Dave, going, I'm learning as we're going. Please keep telling. And that's how I found out that it was about Fonzie jumping the shark, Dave. So, I literally, my arse was twitching last week. I was like, I am well fucking getting sussed out here finally. But there you go.
Oh, no, I bet that was excruciating.
For me, and you would have been pissing yourself laughing. Oh,
I would have been fucking crying. But, I mean, it's one of those, I guess it's one of those phrases though that, like you say, people say it so much as if everyone knows, but you find this in the workplace, don't you? You know, where you throw out these pop culture references and someone who's about fucking 25 or something, it's like, I don't know what you mean. You know, we did the usual suspects the other week, didn't we? Oh, fucking Kaiser Soze. What the fuck are you talking about? I think there will be more people now probably who don't know what that reference is. I would say that reference, sadly, you know, not for us, you know, it'll live on with us, but probably in the younger generation, they probably won't use it and it'll probably just die out eventually.
Oh, brilliant. Sorry, I had to tell you that. I haven't spoken to you this week properly, so I was like, Dave's going to love that when I tell him. Fucking brilliant.
But you are right. I do think this has sort of jumped the shark, and it's got to, like, I mean, I say, like, Batman 66, but also James Bond, like, the whole gadget thing is just absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? But, yeah, and you mentioned before about the racism. I forgot to mention about the guy who gets his head steamed and then shot. So, I mean, that was pretty brutal as well, wasn't it? You could tell that they were playing around with some of the grittiness of that original and trying to replay some of that, as well as the fantastical James Bond gadgets and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then there is things to that. And when the vengeance thing, I mean, one of the things that gets me, Dev, again, you know, he's 71 years old, Bronson. In his heyday, he was ripped up. He wasn't, he was shredded, six-pack. He had a great body on him, you know, for the 60s and that. Very unusual for a leader. He was so fit, physically fit and everything. But what gets me is that scene where he's fighting that guy. And he wraps him in fucking cling film. And he lifts him up like he's lifting up a fucking bag of shopping
again,
or
Michael
something.
Michael Myers reference.
Yeah,
again.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Super strength.
He literally is super strength. But he doesn't, like, go, oh. He just picks him up like he's picking a kid up or something. You know, like when you pick a little toddler up in your arms or something. And just hooks him on the thing. And I'm like, how did anybody even think this would even look continuity fucking real? He can't even, if he tried to lift someone up like that, he'd probably fucking knock his hip out in real life. Bullshit.
If it was realistic, though, just lifting him up, it's like, oh, my back's gone.
My back's gone.
My sciatica's kicking in.
Have you got a waist?
It's off. It's off. I'll leave you alone. Chelsea, enjoy your time with your dad.
It's fucking nonsense, isn't it? That bit was just, I was pissing myself going, oh, fucking Dave must have spotted that. He's just, he's gone to the point where he's like superhuman strength. But I did notice, and I've only found this by reading out, but when, obviously the main henchmen are dead now, so Tommy then gets three others. But it sort of implied, Dave, that they're called Frankie, Mickey and Angel. And I remember Angel, but it's implied that they're the guys who actually attacked and raped his wife and daughter in the first movie. That's supposed at the dress factory, very loosely, but that's what they're saying when I've read it online. Because I remember the angel reference, but from the first one. But yeah, so but that bit again, fucking forklift truck, and I could drive a forklift truck and everything, and I'm just like, fuck me, you know what I mean? Paul has got these tricks. He's not, because he does, obviously he gets a little bit of a kick in it, don't know, and they knock him out, and that he's not like the way Bronson's done it. I'll give him credit. He isn't like he's. Like Rambo, you know, like what's his later Rambo ones, the latest one, he's 70 odd, but he can still go, but Stallone has still got it in him to fucking, you know, he still wants to be the hero, doesn't he? Arnie's done a few like that.
Yeah.
He knows his limitations. He can't go toe to toe. So he's got to be clever. He's got to poison him. And I respect that, but the fucking end of the movie, Jesus Christ, fucking terrible. Tommy O'Shea.
It's great, isn't it? We're all Tommy. And I do think, I again, maybe it's because I love From Dusk Till Dawn so much, and his character is like almost throwaway part at the beginning with the sheriff, you know, before he gets his head blown off, played by Michael Parks. It's just, he's hamming it up so much. And, you know, part of this thing is, you know, he's essentially, once Olivia's been killed off, you know, he's the dad, but like, he doesn't seem to be bothered about being a dad. And again, he just wants to, he just wants to have her for reasons, never really explained. But yeah, I think he plays a great kind of comic book villain in this. And when he's backing up, I mean, we'd seen the mannequin get dissolved in the acid bath, like, say, randomly in this sweatshop. And he's backing up. and you're thinking, I know where this is going. And you're thinking, this guy knows. If you know there's a fucking acid bath right there, you are walking, even if someone's pointing a gun at you, you're walking anywhere but. But no, he stood right on the edge of it. So all Bronson has to do is just push him into the acid bath. And, you know, that's the way he gets killed off. Again, classic kind of fantastical fantasy movie type of, or horror movie type death, not something I expect from Death Wish. But yeah, for me, it was in keeping with the stuff that had come before. And not necessarily in the first half of the movie. I think the first half is more daytime TV movie with a few gritty bits sprinkled here and there. But then it does get a bit silly. I mean, it's like fucking a murderous Kevin McAllister, really, isn't he? Yeah. With all his booby traps and stuff. But so then, I guess... Does he adopt Chelsea from that point? I mean, he's only got, you know, he is in his 70s, so, you know, he's now got a teenage daughter to look after, or stepdaughter. But yeah, I've got a feeling, Chris, I enjoyed this one a little bit more than you did.
Yeah, well, yeah, the end line was classic daytime TV. And he's like, hey, Lieutenant, if you need any help, give me a call. And then he freeze-framed it. It was fucking brilliant. Yeah, you did enjoy it a lot more than me, Dave. But I'll save it till we go to the review thing. But I think Lee's picked an absolute classic here, Dave, for all the wrong reasons. I loved it and hated it in the same respects. But just it amazes me how these movies even get fucking like okayed and everything, because you just like, they're clearly just taking the piss here. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely taking the piss, but they get made and they're happy for them to be reviewed so badly. I can't work it out at all, but there you go.
Well, I think it was an attempted cash in, wasn't it? You know, in the franchise. And so they splashed out $5 million on it. Made bank, $1.7 million. It was an attempted cash in, but, you know, apart from Bronson's age, I guess that's one of the reasons there isn't a Death Wish 6.
No, and 100%. So, Dave, shall we get into our scores?
Let's go.
So massive thank you, Lee. We do appreciate it, mate. Great pick. This is the sort of absolute nonsense that I love talking to you about, Dave. We love the blockbusters and poking fun at them. But when you get a movie like this, and I mean, I'm saying all this, it's my pick next week, Dave. You never know what's coming next, but there you go. But no, honestly, I've enjoyed watching this just for the nonsense of it all. And then you're like me, Dave, we go on these rabbit holes. I find that I watch the movie for what it is, whether I like it or hate it, and I wasn't a massive fan of this movie at all, but then it's the rabbit hole of finding out the information afterwards and how we came to the point of this, and like Bronson literally said he was bored making it, and I'm like, yep, you can fucking tell. He's not a man of many words. He's not exactly a character. He's not like a De Niro, is he, where he can do monologues or things like that. He's not that sort of actor. He's like a Keanu Reeves. Well, give him two lines. I always say about Arnie, give him two lines, he's fine. You over two sentences of dialogue, you're fucked. You need to pass back to the other actor or actress. So it is what it is. I think this movie's fucking awful, but I had so much fun watching it and talking about it with you, Dave. But I'm still sending it to the bottom. It's an older one. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen. It is absolute garbage on toast. And Lee has done me here, because for the whole movie, I'm thinking, 95 minutes of this, and it's funny as well. There's bits where you will watch it and go, is this actually a piss take? Is this a parody? Is this like a Hot Shots type movie, you know, like a Naked Gun? Because it doesn't seem real, or even there's no context to any of it. But the fact that we reviewed it and Lee's picked it, I've really, really enjoyed doing that. But I can't give it and send it to Elm Street. It is utter garbage. So what about yourself, Dave?
Well, as I alluded to before, I think I had a bit more fun watching this than you did. It is a terrible movie. I mean, why this movie was made is the reasons were flawed. You know, if it was an attempted cash grab, then that obviously didn't work out very well. But it's got this weird mashup of like daytime TV feel, sprinkled with these gritty bits, and then you get this weird James Bond gadget type situation where he's killing off people in these new and imaginative ways. So I do feel like Bronson was sleepwalking throughout this movie. It was very weird. The plot leaps are ridiculous. The motivations and how things happen, it's just nonsense. It's an absolute mess. But there are some iconic bits in this, you know, spoken about how old Freddy Flakes gets taken out there, mentioned about the superhuman Hulk-like strength that where you can just lift a bloke up, you know, it's like probably fucking 20 stone or something and just stick him on the peg. So it's just utter nonsense. And so for that, I have a little bit of love for it, you know, just on that so bad it's good kind of scale. So it is an Elm Street. I mean, it's not so bad it's good, it's great. But, you know, there are some moments in this. So I do think, I mean, the fact that it's there on YouTube, you know, again, if someone wants to watch it, I think it's worth a watch for me.
Fair enough.
Right, so Dave, for next week, it is a Patreon special. Our great friend and now supporter of the podcast, Mr. Mike Byrne from the Genuine Chit Chat, has been itching to do a review with us, Dave. So he's picked a movie that me and you probably remember so well because we were late teenagers when it came out. So going back to 1996, and this is the Ewan McGregor classic movie, Dave, Trainspotting. So let's get into the trailer.
Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a big television.
You're a quiet, sensitive type. A little bit crazy, a little bit bad.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know, went on to become Obi-Wan Kenobi after this.
Not far after, was it?
It's just, I guess, 4 years.
Yeah. By the time we got the gig, didn't it?
Pleasure.
Hello there.
He's always been lacking in moral fibre. He knows a lot about Sean Connery. That's hardly a substitute.
Do you see the beast? Have you got it in your shite?
Clear enough, Mitch Moneypenny.
You know, Johnny Miller, his uncle was M in the movies for just years.
Oh, is it?
James Bond, yeah.
Spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing junk food into your mouth.
I've never actually read the book, you know.
I've never read the book, no. Psycho, you're talking to me now, Dave.
Yeah.
What are you two talking about?
Football! What are you talking about?
Shopping!
So iconic for the mid-90s,
yeah,
wasn't it?
100%. This is about the same show Ricky Pop kicks in. Scams. Brilliant. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Then.
Choose leisure wear and matching luggage.
I'm not looking forward to watching that bit with the soil.
Choose
day,
good honestly. Health. Oh. Career. Choose your friends.
Some bits, though.
Choose your future. Choose
stomach some. Churning.
Yeah. Oh, classic.
Can't wait, mate. I've not watched that one for years, so yeah, really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, me too, and I've got plenty of stories, Dave. So anyway,
massive thank you to everyone who supports us. We do appreciate it. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, @VHSStrikesBack. As always, if you do want to support us, please get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So a massive thank you to our patrons. And the roll call of honour for today is, and thank you to Mr. Tony Farina, John Hammond, Blake, Mass, Jax, Herb, Lucky Lulu Green, Kent Gustafson, Heath, Matt, Timothy, Susan, Justin, Dan, Trent, Stephen, Dylan, Helen, Lee, and Mr. Mike Byrne. So thank you so much, guys, for all your support. Amazing support for the podcast. And Dave, what a pick by Lee. But all I'm going to do is say, what are you going to take us out with today, my friend?
Well, we talked about the scene, and I thought one of the more memorable lines was, I said about, you know, why did you give Freddy Flakes this weird character trait of having dandruff? And the reason is because when he gets the football with the bomb inside it, it sets up Charles Bronson for the line, and he says, "Hey, Freddy, I'm going to cure your dandruff problem for you."
I forgot about that. What a line.
So thank you very much. Thanks to all our listeners out there. Thanks to all our supporters. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck?
are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
One ring to go.
All right.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing. Come on. You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You
ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 miles. Come on.
I must break you.